Talk.
Talk show.
Talk back.
Talk radio.
Talk your talk.
Walk your talk.
KGNU Talk.
Call in.
Call in and talk.
Call in and connect.
Connections.
Friday mornings at 8:30.
On KGNU.
And good Friday morning, everybody. Welcome to Connections. I'm Roger Wendell. Time is 8:31. It's Friday, August 30th, and we have a two-part Connections program in store for you this morning. The first half hour will be spent with author Gina Perry about her latest book, Behind the Shock Machine, The Untold Story of the Notorious Milgram Psychology Experiments, an accounting of the obedience electrical shock experiments that took place in 1961 at Yale University. The second half hour of Connections this morning will be with activists working to save Chatfield State Park from an expansion of the reservoir. With plans to increase the amount of water stored at Chatfield, it's projected that numerous hiking trails, bike paths, equestrian areas, and riparian wetlands will be lost forever. That'll be the second half of Connections. We invite your calls and participation this morning. Easy to do. Ava's standing by at the phones at 303-442-4242. Again, that's 442-4242. 9:02 is the time. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Roger Wendell. Joining me in studio are three members of the Audubon Society of Greater Denver. We have with us Polly Reitz, Gene Reitz, and Anne Bunnell. Welcome, everybody, to KGNU this morning. I'd like to start maybe with Polly. Give us a little bit of introduction, kind of your familiarity with this project and your background related to Chatfield Reservoir and those kinds of issues.
Okay. I first, we've lived in Denver for about 37 years, and we've been going out to Chatfield almost all that time as a place to hike and bird watch and take walks and sometimes even cross-country ski. So we've been going there a long time. About 10 years ago, Audubon was already involved in this project, and I started getting involved. I went on a tour of Chatfield with the water providers and then have been going to meetings with them intermittently ever since.
Okay, and we're obviously going to get into the nuts and bolts and details of the history of Chatfield Reservoir and what's taking place there now as we speak and what's proposed for the future. But up next is Anne. Tell us a little bit about your background, Anne. Welcome to KGNU.
Thank you. I'm Anne Bunnell, and the Chatfield Basin has been kind of my baby to look after since we moved here in 1975. And I am a volunteer naturalist for a number of the local parks and entities, open space entities in the area. And when this came up 12 or 13 years ago, I was very interested in participating in the process to try to minimize impacts at the reservoir from adding water to it or storing water there. So it's been something that I've been very involved with for quite some time.
Excellent. And Gene Reitz.
I'm Gene Reitz. Roger, thank you very much for having this session. It's a really critical issue that people need to be much better informed on. Well, I've been involved as a volunteer for Audubon for about 5 years, representing the Audubon Society on a technical review team as part of the Chatfield process. Now, prior to that, I spent 30 years with the Regional Office of EPA, primarily focusing on reviewing projects for compliance with both NEPA and the Clean Water Act. And my academic background is in hydrology and water resources, and so as Polly mentioned earlier, the park itself is really dear to me, as well as some of the policy and environmental issues associated with Chatfield.
And just for clarification, although you all are here on behalf of the local Audubon Society, there are other environmental groups and other organizations concerned about this issue as well, but we only have three microphones in the studio, so this is what we're going with this morning. I appreciate you being here. But for listeners not familiar with Chatfield, can either of you or any of you describe for us its location, how big it is currently, what kind of nature and recreational opportunities it offers, and also maybe what creeks and rivers feed into Chatfield? Anne, is that your bailiwick? Welcome.
Chatfield Lake, if you haven't been there, was built for flood control in the 70s. And it's a good-sized lake. There's a lot of recreation. There's a lot of good wildlife habitat there. It's located south of C-470. There's three counties, Arapahoe, Jefferson County, and Douglas County, that are in the – it's at the corner of all those counties in the lake. And it's a very important source of recreation for about 1.5 million people a year in the metropolitan area. You can go for a whole day for $8 for your vehicle, and lots of people take advantage of this and participate in many, many different recreational things, bird watching, fishing, swimming, kayaking, canoeing, hiking, boating, you name it. It happens there, ballooning. So it's a beautiful area and extremely important. It's kind of a crossroads of several of the plains and the foothills, and also the north and the south regions of climate. So it has a lot of diversity of species because it is a kind of ecological crossroads.
And how does Chatfield compare to, say, other reservoirs throughout the space, the state, rather? And I'm especially familiar with Cherry Creek Reservoir, the area where I grew up in. Are they all kind of similar, and it's the same concept? Polly, you're nodding your head in agreement.
Well, Cherry Creek was also built for flood control. but as Ann said, Chatfield is at kind of a crossroads. It's close to the foothills. It's also out on the plains. Cherry Creek is more of a plains reservoir. And Chatfield has, because of its position right at these crossroads and the riparian areas along the Platte River and Plum Creek, has a very high diversity, for example, of bird life. They've recorded 375 species of birds there. It's a park because of the high visitation and all of the recreational opportunities there. It's a state park that makes money, and that's very rare in the state park system, and it actually supports other parks in the system. So this project would not just affect Chatfield. It would affect other state parks, because if the revenue drops there, then the extra revenue won't go to other parks in the system all over Colorado.
So although bicyclists and hikers and walkers can get into the park for free, there's this $8 fee per vehicle that Ann mentioned. 1.5 million visitors per year go through Chatfield Reservoir itself, but apparently there are other ways they make money as well. I think it's the marina and other services that are offered. Tell us just a little bit about that. We won't get too bogged down in the money-making aspects of the park.
One of the concerns, in part, is, as you suggest, the marina is an important concessionaire, and one of the really critical issues is, with this project, what would happen to that marina and how they could mitigate those impacts. And that is really a very difficult issue, and some people really question whether that can be fully mitigated. So that marina in itself, again, because of the concessionaire, generates a lot of money for the state park, and as Polly mentioned, that helps all the other parks in the area. For example, El Dorado Canyon State Park here near Boulder, it is not self-sustaining, so some of the money from Chatfield helps support parks such as the one here.
That's an interesting point. Just backing up for a little bit more of history, and then we'll get into the nuts and bolts of how much water is going to be added and the inundation of trees and those kinds of things we'll get to in just a moment. But apparently the Army Corps of Engineers are the ones responsible, or back then were the ones building these reservoirs. How did a reservoir or a flood control dam end up as a state park? I don't see the connection.
It's not unusual for that to occur. Again, it was originally built strictly for flood control, but then money was acquired to purchase a water conservation pool to keep some water in the reservoir, and then the land is actually leased to the Colorado State Parks. And so State Parks leases the land, and that's very similar to some of the other major parks in Colorado, such as Cherry Creek and Pueblo. And so, again, the land is leased, but the Corps actually owns it, and since the Corps built the reservoir, manages the reservoir, they're responsible for looking at this particular project in NEPA compliance.
So the state of Colorado then wouldn't have much say as to whether this the reservoir or the water quantity should be increased or not. It's all up to the Army Corps of Engineers to make that final determination through the NEPA or the environmental impact statement.
That is correct. The final decision is up to the Corps. Colorado, through the Department of Natural Resources, has a stake in this, and that's one of the somewhat ironies of this project. Within the Colorado Department of Natural Resources, you have the Water Conservation Board, which is a supporter of the project, but you also have the Department of Parks and Wildlife, which has some real concerns about the project. So how that ultimately will play out in terms of the official position of the state, I think, still remains to be seen.
Okay, 9:12 is the time. You're listening to Connections. I'm Roger Wendell. My three guests are Polly Reitz, Gene Reitz, and Ann Bonnell of the Audubon Society of Greater Denver. We're talking about a possible expansion of Chatfield Reservoir, the actual quantity or volume of water in the reservoir, inundating wild areas, riparian areas, and those kinds of things. If you want to participate in this conversation or you have a question, feel free to call. Ava's standing by at the phones at 303-442-4242. As I promised a moment ago, let's get into the nuts and bolts of this, as it were. What is actually being proposed? What do they want to do with Chatfield Reservoir at this point? Obviously, they want to add water to it, but give us the details. Who cares to answer?
Okay. The proposal on the table is to reallocate some space behind the dam for municipal and industrial use. And the space, they estimate, would hold 20,000 acre feet. The current reservoir is about 27,000, so it's a considerable amount. However, our questions have been what kinds of water are really available to fill that space, and, of course, the impacts of putting water in there on the state park. So that's the proposal on the table, to change the allocation of the space. That's why it's called the reallocation. And then the water rights that are available to fill it. And mostly these are the providers who want to store water there are mostly South Metro. There are a couple of, there are two actually, farmers groups that want to use it also. But mostly it's Highlands Ranch, that's Centennial Water and Sanitation District, Castle Rock, Castle Pines North, Stonegate, and some other South Metro areas. The Colorado State Parks has some stake in it, and the Botanic Gardens has a very, very small piece. We've lost a number of the big players. Inglewood dropped out very early. Parker dropped out some years ago. Aurora and Brighton have dropped out of the project. Roxborough Water and Sanitation District now, and Perry Park Country Club, which was going to get a little bit of water for their golf course. So we're mostly using South Metro entities that would like to store some water. And these guys have very junior water rights. They're last in line with the bucket. So in a year that's, and we'll probably get into that more, a year that's dry or average, they probably wouldn't get any water to store there.
But backing up again earlier, I don't recall if it was Ann or Polly, one of you mentioned that this project has been in the works for 12 or 13 years now, this idea to increase the capacity of water storage at Chatfield. Is it because they need the water now, or are these entities just interested in accumulating this stored water for future growth, future use? What's the idea behind it? Are they starving for the water as we speak?
No, I think these entities right now have an adequate water supply, and I guess one of the issues is, with this so-called new water, and again, it's a very questionable how much there really is this to really maintain the existing, or is it for more sprawl? And it's really not clear what that water would actually be used for.
But big cities you mentioned, like even Parker and Inglewood, which are sizable now, why would they have withdrawn from the project then if water is a question for future growth or even immediate need? Why did they withdraw?
They had better alternatives, and the price was getting too high. And it's very complicated dealing with 11 other entities at this time and trying to decide who's going to get their water when. And so that's going to be a very complicated issue in itself, whereas if you just had a gravel pit and it was your water, it would be very easy to determine when you have the right to get the water out of that. This water... they've looked at some averages since 1942 till 2000. Yeah, 2000. And it showed that these water rights that they have would only give them enough water to fill it once out of every 3.5 years. So a good part of the time, the water is going to be right where it is now. And the facilities that have been rebuilt further out and shade trees that have been removed will be high and dry. And further away, you'll have to walk further to get to the lake to fish or boat or whatever you want to, whatever your recreation might be.
And we're going to talk about alternatives near the conclusion of our time together mm-hmm. this morning. But you mentioned price. What is this going to cost if they actually succeed at getting this through? And we're going to talk about that as well as far as what folks can do to comment on this process. But how much money is involved here just to add, what is it, a dozen feet of water to this reservoir?
Well, the estimates are in the environmental impact statement, they're estimating $184 million, but that estimate was done before they knew how much the marina, replacing the marina, would cost. So that's another probably $6 million, somewhere in there. We aren't really sure. It probably will end up being about $200 million, somewhere in that neighborhood, because they have to allow for contingencies as well. And I just want to elaborate on what Ann said. The water won't be there about 65% of the time. But they are going to clear out about 586 acres of vegetation, and that also includes the trails and the parking lots and everything that will be inundated. So the providers have been saying it will only affect 45 acres of trees, but actually about 250 acres will be cleared out because they don't want to have trees and stumps floating around in the reservoir to endanger boaters. And another 300 and so acres of other types of vegetation and facilities. So we're talking, actually, if you add it all up, it's more than 700 acres that would be cleared. And if the water's not there, there's going to be a big bathtub ring.
And as the three of you are aware, I stopped by Chatfield to familiarize myself with the area in preparation for today's program because, as I mentioned earlier, my expertise is with Cherry Creek Reservoir as a kid down in southeast Aurora. But my very unscientific calculation, and I just want to make that clear, I just did this with some internet help and Googling things. As best I can tell, there'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 trees that will have to be removed. And that, again, I just picked that up on my own. It's something I calculated myself. But let's say that figure is roughly accurate. 10,000 trees are going to have to be removed. Tell us a little bit, again, why do trees have to be removed if we're going to increase the volume of a reservoir? And what typically does it cost to remove, say, a 100-year-old cottonwood? Everybody's pointing to Ann.
Yeah. Well, you know, they have to remove the trees. They did this when they first built the beginning of the reservoir. They removed a large number of trees. But they have to do this because the trees will die if they're underwater for more than 2 months or if they're underwater for several years for a little over a month in a row. So when these trees die, they would fall down and they would be a hazard to navigation and a hazard to the outlets where they let the water out of the reservoir because it goes out through tunnels at the dam. So they need to remove these trees. And it's cottonwood. It's expensive to remove because nobody wants to burn cottonwood. Doesn't smell very good. And they can't chip it because it will cause problems with the water quality if you add those chips into the lake. So they have to haul that stuff off. It's just a huge amount. They have a price on it. It was bid, I guess. I'm concerned about the price, whether it would be accurate or not, because as you say, there's just thousands of trees. Now they're saying, well, they might do this incrementally. That means not all at once. And so if the bidder said he was going to do it all at once and he brings all his equipment, if he does it incrementally, it's going to cost a lot more because he has to bring his equipment back. So in our estimation, we feel that there's a number of places that they have underestimated the cost. It's kind of like what we've dealt with fast tracks. People underestimated what it costs to buy land They underestimated many, many things. And this is a concern to us that we'll get about halfway through this mitigation, and then they'll say, oh, we ran out of money. Sorry, Charlie. But we still need to store the water. So,
Roger, I just want to follow up on your observation about the trees lost, because the trees are really critical. I mean, that's the important wildlife habitat. That's where all the recreation is. It's under the trees in the shade. And so one of our major concerns is you really cannot mitigate the loss of these trees. And so, again, that's a really important factor for people to recognize.
They want to go off-site to maybe buy conservation easements or fee title land, and a conservation easement off-site is on private land. Nobody will get to use that. So it's a net loss. It's a net loss of habitat, period, because even if you go off-site, there's already some habitat there, and all you're doing is maybe protecting it from something, maybe sawing down the trees, because it's usually riparian. You can't build in it anyway because it's floodplain. So it's a net loss of habitat, and it's a huge net loss of very important habitat and shade, which is a big amenity. And in the wintertime, the protection, the wind protection that the trees give for picnic areas. And they're planning to plant some trees, but we can't really figure out exactly where they're going to get the water to water those trees. And I can't find where they're buying the trees or what size they're going to replace. And they're not going to replace the thousands that you're talking about. They're mentioning a mosaic, which means little clusters here and there of trees that would, in what size, we don't know. I can't find the size of the trees that they plan to plant. So there's all these unknown factors that really concern us.
I want to talk more about mitigation in just a moment, reminding everybody the time is 9:23. You're listening to Connections, and my guests are from the Audubon Society of Greater Denver, and we're talking about the expansion of Chatfield Reservoir. Getting back to this mitigation idea, we've been talking about trees and kind of this hazy idea of replacing, by my estimate, 10,000 trees with a few clusters here and there. Tell us more about mitigation. I know we're going to be losing some equestrian areas. They even launch balloons in part of this park. A lot of cycling takes place there. There's this riparian habitat. What's the core? What are the entities involved in this project offering as mitigation or alternatives or substitutes for so many of these things that are going to be lost at Chatfield?
Well, they will replace the, they say they will replace all the recreation facilities. So we've talked about the marina. There are a number of picnic areas. There's another boat ramp besides the marina. what else?
Well, a critical one is the loss of about 3/4 mile of the South Platte River.
Right.
Which is a very important amenity to the park. You see a lot of recreation, you see fishing, you see families there. And so a real question is, how do you mitigate the loss of a free-flowing stream? And at this point, they're talking about trying to do some sort of enhancement either in the park or above the dam as well as downstream, but it's not real clear what exactly they would do. So the loss of, again, a free-flowing stream, the loss of mature cottonwoods, these are things that you really can't replace.
Yeah.
And mitigation in general, as I mentioned earlier, I've been involved in water resource projects for some 30 years, and it's not unusual for applicants to promise the world in order to get approval from the various entities. But then as time passes on, as Ann mentioned, sometimes they say, well, we ran out of money, or we can't do this and can't do that. And so often in the end, even when they have the best of intentions initially, the mitigation does not occur, and the environment and the recreation resources really take a tremendous loss. And since this project in particular has such immense impacts, the biggest costs are actually the mitigation costs. And so some of these things, again, even if under the best of intentions, will be impossible to mitigate.
Yeah. The one thing Ann mentioned is that the loss of, and this is the state parks estimate too, 587 acres of publicly accessible land, and they will then to inundation, and the when the water's there or not there, it'll be, when it's not there, it'll be open flats, and when it's there, it'll be very shallow water most places and not accessible. So to mitigate that, they are going to, well, there is no mitigation, because if they get easements on private land that they want to work with down on West Plum Creek and Plum Creek, a lot of that land is not accessible to the public. So it's a net loss of park land.
Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time left, so let's try to squeeze in some alternatives here. Instead of adding more water or turning Chatfield into a larger storage facility, what are some alternatives to this very expensive and what appears to me to be a damaging project?
Well, I think we can see, as we mentioned earlier, a number of the initial proponents themselves brightened Aurora Park or have dropped out. So clearly there are alternatives to storage in Chatfield. Specifically in this on Chatfield, we have suggested there needs to be a much more serious effort to address conservation and efficiency. I think we all recognize that with population growth, water demands are going to increase. With climate change, in all probability, we'll have less water, so we have to get much more serious about conservation. And that is not really adequately addressed now. They've identified some conservation programs, but they have not quantified what they could do. So conservation efficiency has got to be a key. Secondly, gravel pit storage. That's a very common technique that's used by water providers up and down the Front Range. There are some gravel pits in the immediate area of Cherry Creek that Chatfield that the Corps looked at, but then they dismissed. That needs to be looked at more carefully. There is an opportunity to store water in the ground in aquifer recharge recovery. That has the advantage of you don't have the tremendous evaporative losses that you have at Chatfield. So gravel pit storage, underground storage,
Ruder Hess
Reservoir is a very large reservoir near Parker that is largely empty. A number of the water providers who are looking at water storage in Chatfield are also now part of Project WISE, which would store water. So that's another option.
And
so,
Ruder Hess apparently is just downstream 10 miles from Chatfield.
It's not really downstream. It's across several basins, but it's actually near Parker. But as I mentioned, several of the entities who are interested in Chatfield are also interested in Project WISE. And so there are all these things that the Corps sort of took a look at, but we look at the NEPA documents, and there seemed to have been a very strong bias, unfortunately, toward what the project proponents wanted themselves.
So where are we at this point? Where is the Corps as far, the Army Corps of Engineers, as far as the decision-making process? Apparently, earlier this month, they made their final decision, and there's still, a few days left for citizens to get involved or make a comment?
Well, actually, what they issued early in August was the final environmental impact statement, and that's open for comment until September 3rd, and people can send comments to the Corps either by email or by snail mail. Letters have to be postmarked by September 3rd. But there's more to go on, because then the Corps has to look at comments on the final EIS, and then they'll issue a record of decision. We're not sure when that will come out, but that will maybe sometime this fall or early next year.
So apparently there still is hope, there still is time if people want to become involved.
And also the Colorado Wildlife Commission, Parks and Wildlife Commission, has to sign off on the mitigation plan. And that will happen. They will take public comment in December and January. So that's another opportunity for public comment. And we would recommend that people check a website that was set up, www.savechatfield.org. That's got all the information, including this final EIS, and the addresses to write to and the deadlines and so on and so forth.
So that's savechatfield.org. With our few remaining moments together, is there more people can learn about the Audubon Society here in the greater Denver metro area, or a way they can contact you? Do you folks have your own website?
We have a website. It's www.denveraudubon.org. And all of our information about our chapter, all our programs, our newsletter and so forth are on there. And we're a very active chapter and have many wonderful programs around the state and in other countries.
Excellent. Well, Polly, Jean, and Anne, I want to thank you so much for coming all the way up to Boulder, to KGNU's Boulder studio this morning, and teaching us a bit about Chatfield Reservoir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
Excellent. My guests have been Polly Reitz, Jean Reitz, and Anne Bunnell of the Audubon Society of Greater Denver, and we've been chatting about the proposal to increase water storage at Chatfield State Park just in southwest Denver there. You've been listening to Connections. I'm Roger Wendell. And up next will be the Morning Sound Alternative. I want to offer a big thanks to Ava for handling phones and other details behind the scenes. And I want to thank you, our loyal listeners, for supporting your community radio station, KGNU Denver, KGNU Boulder. Have a great day. Here's Linkin Park.